Thank you, Chris. I liked where you were going with that. I kind of liked it better. We all just need to get on board. Has a little catch to it. I like that. Well, good morning and welcome. Today we are hitting up the final Parsha in Sefer Vayikra? What is the last Parsha in Leviticus? What is Parsha Bechukotai? And what is now the 33rd of the 54 Parshiot that comprise the Torah being the first five books of our Bibles, and again, what we have been calling the Jesus backstory. And so, if you're grabbing a Pew Bible, page 91, we're going to head to Leviticus 26. Bechukotai actually runs from 26 and 3 all the way to the end to 27 and 34. It begins here, Im Bechukotai, which is, again, the name of our Parsha. It translates, if in my decrees, or it can read, if in my statutes, if in my ordinances. Telehu, meaning to walk, or I think this is interesting language here, to follow. Ve'et mitzvotai, and my commandments. Tishmeru, you will keep, you will observe, or again, interesting language, you will hear. Vasitem, otam, and it says, and do them. And so we can read this, we can translate this to read, if you follow my decrees and will hear my commandments and do them. And from here, the rest of the Parsha, by way of summary, is all about consequences. It reads of blessings when we follow, when we hear, when we do. And it reads of rebuke when we do not follow or hear or do. And with that, then, it really invites us to choose, offers us a choice. Telehu, right, to follow or not to follow. Tishmeru, to hear or not to hear. Asitem, to do or not to do. All of which is really backstory to the very life and teachings of Jesus, right? To follow, to hear, to do. It's kind of like a dance. I'd like to think of it as a dance, right? Today we're dancing with Jesus. It's a three-step. Are there three steps in dance? Is there a three-step, two-step? Obviously, I don't know dancing. I'm not much of a dancer. But I do know that to follow, telehu, is where it all begins. We could say it is the first step. Now, next week, we'll pick up steps two and three. But for today, it is telehu. It is to follow. And so, with that in mind, let's jump over to Mark's Gospel, page 707. If you're grabbing a Pew Bible, we're going to spend the rest of the morning here. The words, again, will be on the screen behind me. Mark 1 and 16, if you're looking for it. Jesus, remember, from last week, Jesus has been in the synagogue, and he has been reading, right, not the Haftarah, not the prescribed reading of the day, but remember, he was reading from Isaiah, intentionally giving us what was his inaugural address, giving us his foundational sort of declaration, giving us, in a word, his mission statement. And if you recall that mission statement, it was about land returned, and it was about debt forgiven, and it was about slaves being freed. It was about inequality and injustice being flipped right side up. It was good news for the poor. It was freedom for the captive, sight for the blind. Right? It was liberation for the oppressed. And it's within that context, then, that we pick up today. Jesus inviting, calling each one of us, right, to follow. Telehu, right, to follow in his mission. And we see that idea right here at the very beginning of the Gospel of Mark, chapter 1, verse 16. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me. Telehu, come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets, and they, it says, followed him. When he, Jesus, had gone a little farther, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat preparing their nets. Without delay, he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men. And it says here, they followed him. They followed him. Now, just for a few minutes here, to get a bit of the backstory, if you've been around, at least for the last 6 to 10 years, you heard some of this before. We've touched on this before. I think the last time might have been 6 years ago. I don't remember. But noting that our educational system, similar to in Judaism, there's kind of three stages or three levels. Now, scholars are a little bit divided on some of the details, but the undercurrent, the movement, the direction, the focus, the purpose, all of that is the same. So just in some of the details, might be a little bit different depending on the scholarship that we read. But there were three levels. The first level was called Beit Sefer. It's called the House of Book. And in general, this would be for all Jewish children, ages about 6 to 10, some say as early as 5, even up to the age of 12, but we'll go with 6 to 10. These children would go to the local synagogue where they would be taught by the local rabbi as their teacher. And the focus was on the Torah. The focus centered. There was the alphabet and all of that, but there was the focus on the Torah. In fact, a big focus was memorizing the Torah. Keep in mind, they each did not have their own copy that they could read. And so memorization in the ancient world was a big deal. And so their focus was on memorizing the Torah, the first five books, what we've been working our way through week by week. And it was not uncommon for the young ones to have memorized the entire Torah. Now, for most children, girls, and then for most boys, they would stop at this point. The girls would start working alongside their mom, boys would start working alongside their dads and working in the family business, whatever that might be, whether it's fishing or carpentry or what have you. But if you were one of the best, you would go on to what was called Beit Talmud. Beit Talmud extended that Torah study to the entire Tanakh, which is the entire Old Testament, and there would be a focus on memorizing the Tanakh. Along with that, they would learn the art of questioning, or the art of questions, the art of asking good questions. And the way study went in that day, by way of example, if we were here, if I were to ask you what's 2 + 2, probably every one of you would say 4, and that would be correct. But in the ancient world, you were taught to answer a question with a question. It was a way to show that you kind of had mastery of the subject. And it was also an act of humility to keep the conversation going, to engage with one another. Judaism, in ancient Judaism and current contemporary Judaism, there's a real sharing and a conversation and a debating and so if I asked you what's 2 + 2, maybe the response would be, what is the square root of 16? What is 8 divided by 2? You know, and so we would go back and forth with these questions. And so in Beit Talmud, that's part of what you're doing, is you're learning this art of asking questions. And then again, most would stop at that point. They would head home, work with dad with the family business. But if you were one of the best, you would then go on to what was called Beit Midrash, which is house of study. Scholarship puts this anywhere between the ages of 14 and 18, depending, not to get bogged down, but some scholarship says Beit Talmud and Beit Midrash are actually one and the same. They're kind of combined. But in Beit Midrash, for our purpose this morning, this would be children that are the best of the best would go on. And not only are you now continuing to study the whole of the Tanakh, you're looking at rabbinical legal discussions, you're studying oral Torah, you're learning how to debate. And at this point, your goal, right, is to become a rabbi. That's the direction that's being moved in. And so at this point, you would have a young man who would want to become a rabbi. And so the order of it was that he would approach a rabbi. He would find a well-respected, renowned, authoritative type of rabbi, and he would approach him, and he would say something to the effect of, "Rabbi, I would like to join your Beit Midrash, your house of study. Please accept me as one of your Talmidim." And at that point, the rabbi would begin to question this young potential disciple. He would begin to ask questions, and in fact, sort of to interrogate is probably a better word. He would ask question after question, really trying to find out if this young man had what it takes. If he really was like the best of the best of the best. Now, for most boys, they would hear the rabbi say something to the effect of, "Ah, son, you know Torah and you know it well, but you will not be studying to be a rabbi. You will not be studying as my disciple. So go home, make babies, pray that your babies become rabbis, join in your father's business and your father's trade, because you will not be studying to be a rabbi." And so most young men, that's what they heard. But if you were really the best of the best of the best, if the rabbi believed that you had the fortitude, the intellect, the ethic, the devotion, then you would hear those words that every young Jewish boy longed to hear, and that is Lech Acharai. Lech, we can think of Telehu, right? It's the same root, Lech meaning follow, Acharai, after me, follow after me. And at this point, this young man would leave his family, leave everything behind, and he would set out and follow his rabbi. Now with that, there were two sort of goals, two primary objectives for each disciple. For one, it was to learn your rabbi's yoke. Yoke refers to your rabbi's teachings. And so you would want to learn his teachings, his worldview, his philosophy, his perspective. Mostly you would want to learn his interpretation of the scriptures. And so you would saturate yourself in every word, right? So every thought, every sentence, every word, every syllable, every letter that he spoke. Just soak yourself and saturate yourself in everything, wanting to gain everything. You wanted to think like he thought. You wanted to know like he knows. Right? You wanted to learn your rabbi's yoke. And then second with that, it was to become just like him. Your goal was to become just like your rabbi, to emulate his every move. And so you would watch his facial expressions, you would watch his hand gestures, and you would want to imitate those and copy those. You would want to know, does he eat his bread or his soup first? And you would eat your bread or your soup first, depending on your rabbi. And so it was to learn your rabbi's yoke, and it was to become just like him. In fact, from the Mishnah, we read, "May you follow your rabbi so closely," this is a paraphrase, that you may be covered in the dust of his sandals. Right, and so that you would follow your rabbi so closely, to learn his yoke, to sit on his every word, to think like he thinks, talk like he talks, walk like he walks, right? To become just like him, so that you could carry on the mission. Right, and we can think again to last week. Right, dancing with Jesus, the first step, it's Telehu, it's Lech Acharai. Jesus says, "Come, follow after me. Come dance with me," which on the one hand seems like no problem, makes perfect sense what's happening, except that it really doesn't, because a rabbi would never go to a disciple and say, "Come follow me." It was always the disciple that would go and seek out a rabbi. And so that's completely upside down here, because here we read Jesus, right? He goes to Simon called Peter. He goes to Andrew. He goes to James and John, right? He goes to them, right? He seeks them out. He calls to them, "Lech Acharai, come follow me." Not to mention that Jesus was not going after the best of the best here, and we know that because they're fishing, right? They're back working in the Father's business. Right? They're we don't know how far they went, but we know that somewhere in the age of 10 or 12 or 14, they probably heard those words. Ah, son, you know Torah and you know Torah well. But go home and make babies. Pray that your babies become rabbis. Right? And yet, even in the midst of that, here comes Jesus and he's speaking, right, these words to a young Jewish man, to what a young Jewish man would have longed for his entire life, right? Again, Tilehu, right? Lechaharai, come follow me, dance with me. Now we don't live in the first century. We're not physically with Jesus as they were. So the question becomes, well, what does it mean for us today? And I would argue it means the exact same thing it meant 2,000 years ago. Right? The first dance step, Jesus says, is follow. And that means to learn his yoke. Right? To learn Jesus' yoke. His teachings, his worldview, his interpretation of Scripture. To understand what matters to Jesus, right? To understand his mission, become just like him. Right? And so the invitation really is to soak our thoughts, our imagination, our creativity, right? Our hearts and our minds deep into the well of Jesus' life and his teachings. Right? Our hearts and our minds into God's heart and mind. Hopefully Sunday morning is a part of that. Right? Hopefully being here and learning and sharing and growing together and seeking the teachings of Jesus, hopefully that is a part of what it means to learn his yoke. But we also have to understand that it was never meant to be a one day a week experience. Right? This dance was to be a daily dance. And so hopefully, yes, here on Sunday mornings, hopefully as we gather, we learn and we grow and we share, but it's not a one-day-a-week adventure. And so I want to leave us with a few questions just to think and consider as we think about this idea of to follow, this first dance step of to follow, and ask, am I learning the yoke of Jesus? Am I learning the yoke of Jesus? And with that, we could just simply ask, am I seeking to become more like him? And maybe one of the ways we get at that is we could ask questions like this. We could ask, do I create opportunity each day to read my Bible? We could ask, do I spend time meditating on the life and teachings of Jesus? We could ask, do I make time for memorizing passages? I'm not suggesting you have to memorize Genesis to Malachi. But to memorize a passage, a verse, to let it kind of soak in your heart, your mind, into your bones. You know, memorizing not so we get a badge, but simply that we begin to get within the core of who we are, the Word of God, the heart of God. And then with that, we could also ask, what habit will I develop that I might follow Jesus more closely? What habit will I develop that I might follow Jesus more closely? Keeping in mind, again, in the ancient world, you left everything behind, right? You went with your rabbi and you followed him. You ate, you slept, you walked, you talked, and you left everything behind. And so maybe we might want to consider, what might God be asking me to give up? Right, that I might follow him more closely, that I might telehu. Maybe it's a matter of a misplaced priority. Maybe it's kind of crowding out what it means to follow Jesus. And so maybe we can ask, how might God be calling me to reorient my commitments? How might God be calling me to reorient my commitments? Maybe it's an attitude or an arrogance, and we could ask, what is God inviting me to lay down or let go? Dancing with Jesus, the first step is follow after me. Imbe hukotai telehu. if in my decrees you follow.